Hello, and welcome to
Game Boys,
our gay bi-wiki podcast,
where we translate nerd culture.
And let's be honest,
sometimes it takes us three tries to get this right.
And I'm going to jump right into it every time now when you're just not paying attention.
Probably.
Hello, how are you doing, Wesley?
Welcome to...
How are you?
I'm good.
You're good.
Long day. Good day.
Good day?
Yeah. I don't know. I'm still, you know, it's the day after our wretches session.
Oh,
it's,
yes.
It's, I'm all aglow for a good long while after each one of those.
Sure. We just need to have another one scheduled, I guess. So there is that.
Yes. How are you doing?
It's the day after wretches, so I'm answering a bunch of fucking questions. And trying to tell myself, yes, this is what you do for a living, without getting paid for it.
True. You're getting exposure.
Oh, God. The last time I did something for exposure was a go-go gig, and I told them after they decided to tell me, oh, we paid you in underwear. I went, no.
I've gotten less for go-going gigs, to be fair.
True. Regardless, though, when I'm spending like $300 a night for a hotel room in downtown Philly, back in the day,
Yeah. That does not, yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't really line up well. Yeah, so anyways, we've done a couple things. And I think we should start off with the one thing that we literally watched and finished after wrapping up last episode's recording. Would you like to talk about the Ahsoka series?
Oh.
What?
Yeah.
What?
The further away we get from this...
Why?
Yeah.
Why? Oh, we're gonna have a talk.
Is this... I'd say this is gonna be spicy, but no, this is just gonna be sad.
What?
It was fine. Like, we have cleared the bar of they didn't tarnish these beloved characters. Thank you for not doing anything with them that might upset people. I guess that's as much as I can say.
Huh.
Yep.
Wow.
Well, okay, we see Thrawn in the trailers. Thrawn is in this. They do not do Thrawn well.
Okay, I'm gonna need some clarifications on that one, because I think they did Thrawn incredibly well.
The performance was great. Uh-huh. Getting the actual voice actor to do the live action is a phenomenal idea. He has such screen presence. Uh-huh. Excellent.
Sure.
Perfect. He's a fucking moron.
Oh my god. Okay, so I need you to remember that Thrawn is in the past and Rebels has failed because of inadequacies in the people that he is entrusting. And this is exactly what happens in Ahsoka.
Okay, spoilers for ending of Rebels, I guess. Thrawn ultimately fails because in his meticulously crafted 4D chess of a plan to take down the Rebellion... he did not foresee 14-year-old Jedi riding in on a fleet of space whales with interstellar travel potential. That was what brought his downfall, and it came out of fucking nowhere. He had otherwise completely won that fight.
We are talking about the same 14-year-old boy that he was, you know, trying to duck in and out of and studied throughout the entire series and had literally, like, relics from everyone's fucking history for no fucking reason whatsoever, other than to understand his enemy.
Yes. Yes, he's had a few encounters with Ezra. Should have known not to underestimate him. Counterpoint, fucking space whales.
Sure. They are still a presence in the universe, and someone with that vast knowledge might have overlooked them, I guess.
Regardless, by comparison, in the end of Ahsoka, he goes, I know where the enemy are coming. I know that they're desperate and going to plan a last-ditch effort. I know they're going to be coming through this elevator shaft. I am just going to shoot them a lot and then send one force after another at them one by one. Because, you know, I have to get all of my matched luggage onto this ship, even though it will take three full fucking days.
There is a lot of nuance to this that you are absolutely forgetting. I will point out. And I don't want to get into the nitty-grittiness because we're already very, very close to spoiler territory.
Ooh.
So this is going to be a conversation for Game Boys after cut.
Oh, God. You know, cut this out if you need to.
And I did.
It was a terrible climax.
It was an okay climax from an incredible series.
For a villain that is defined by his, like, his tactical thinking, there not a single thought existed in anyone's brain.
I want to ask you that we are at the end of Mass Effect 3 with a decade of shit coming. We have seen Disney try to introduce Thrawn-level villains and do it horribly. Mm-hmm. I would like to point to Quantumania again. Do you want to go back to Quantumania, where the villain is taken away by ants, and then we're expected to give them the same gravitas as the person that just snaps his finger and destroys half the universe?
You know, honestly, this kind of does feel like going from Thanos to Kang, going from Rebels Thrawn to Ahsoka Thrawn.
I sorely disagree.
Okay.
Sorely disagree.
Whew.
So, other than you shitting on Thrawn, did you like anything else in this series?
You know, the characters that were over here are over there now. That's about all that happened. It was just a bunch of people sort of walking around.
Cool. I will talk about this now because Wesley doesn't have any actual opinion. I enjoyed seeing how our rebel heroes have evolved over the past couple of years and how life has moved on and how they have readjusted and then how they come back and reunite after going their separate ways. Including, like, no-name characters, like the Governor of Lothal, that, like, you just didn't expect them to get the actual voice actor to play the live-action role. And he's here. There is such little detail and care to this series that I think that has been severely overlooked by some people.
Okay, so my list of positives. The cast, amazing. They are turning in phenomenal performances, especially the ones that are inheriting roles that we have grown very attached to. These specific affects that Sabine has, for example, like she nails the voice, she nails a lot of the facial emotions, all of that. All of them do this. Ooh, dodging around certain spoilers. That's all great. The costuming is fucking out of this world. The sets are kind of fine. It's fine. Yeah, costumes. Mainly just phenomenal. Especially... Morgan.
Oh, Morgan, yes.
Morgan. I can't remember.
Morgan Elsbeth.
Elsbeth, thank you. And her posse. Oh my god. Phenomenal costuming and makeup.
Yeah.
Yeah. It pisses me off so much more knowing that all of this talent went into this
anyways,
show where nothing happens.
Yes. There's so much talent in a very fun show.
I'll be quiet.
You will. Because the only actual thing I have to say that is negative about the show is we don't see enough Chopper.
There's not quite enough Chopper. Hera kind of is off on her own, telling her own story, and nothing really happens with anyone. That's my whole thing.
I do feel like this is, if anything, that I can probably give credence to whatever kind of batshit opinion you have. Is that I could say that maybe this is them testing the waters. Maybe this is them trying to set up for a Rebels live-action television show or for whatever this Dave Filoni movie is going to be where they are going to be back in together. And yes.
Safe. Yes, this was very safe.
Do you want to go back to Book of Boba? Do you want to go back to Obi-Wan?
You know, I feel like those were both also trying to be safe.
No. No, they were not.
Obi-Wan sure as hell was. And, I mean, that show was kind of a flawed premise from the get-go because nothing could possibly happen in that show.
Were they trying to go safe? They had Kid Leia for some reason. They didn't need Kid Leia.
She sure would be a crowd pleaser, though.
Would she, though?
Of course.
That was something I was not pleased by.
Oh, God. And then there's that episode 6, I think it was, possibly 7. The opening scene, one of the main cast is in real deep trouble, political trouble, and a fan service character just shows up and goes, yeah, another fan service character said you're not in trouble anymore.
Okay, yes, that was a little much. And this is in the Ahsoka series, just to clarify, because I really thought you meant episode 6 or 7, the movies.
Oh, no. 6 or 7 would be very weird to confuse.
Yes, that's very, very different, honey. Yes. But yes, there is a little bit of an obtuse, we're going to talk about this character, even though it does not make sense for this character to be, well, spoilers!
Some things were working against the production. Unfortunately, one of the most compelling characters in this season tragically passed away shortly before the first episode aired.
Yes.
So I don't know what scrambling might have had to be done to retcon his character, if there was more planned for him in future stuff.
And it clearly seems like there was, just the way it ended, which is kind of sad.
Yeah, so that definitely contributes a lot to my disillusionment with this series, is two of the most compelling characters seem to have no future, possibly just because one of their actors has passed away.
Can I at least ask what your opinion on, you know, the protagonist, the name of the show, Ahsoka, was?
So, I still don't feel like I know her well enough to really get her. Like, I have not watched Clone Wars, which I think is where you get all of the character development for her, and I'm not sure anything has happened with her since. Sure as hell doesn't happen in Ahsoka.
Ha. Huh.
Like, episode 5 was, like, the big deal of her getting, like, this amazing moment to connect with her past.
Yes.
And I don't know what came of that. Did she learn any lessons from that?
Yeah.
I don't know what she learned.
And I would say it, but that's a spoiler.
I know, you'll have to tell me after, but she still goes through the rest of the series just kind of being enigmatic and a touch catty. Can I just say catty?
You can say smug. Catty. I'm going to have to edit all of this, so.
Sure. All of it?
Yes.
All of it. Okay. Yeah, like, I don't... I'm not sure I get Rosario Dawson's interpretation of this character. She's just... I mean, I guess being a Grey Jedi kind of makes you feel superior to everybody else.
Yeah. You're kind of the best of both. You're like Hannah Montana.
I don't get that reference.
Anyways, I think it's probably best we just move on from this conversation. Maybe. Let the audience know. Send us a carrier pigeon with your opinions and send them directly to Wesley because he's wrong.
That's fine. I have many good things to say about the series, just not its story.
And that's what you focused your time on.
Yeah.
Anyways, I finished a gay romance novel that I have already hinted, alluded to at this already.
Yeah.
But I have read the queer romance novel In the Lives of Puppets.
Is that what it's actually called?
Uh-huh.
I don't think I knew the title.
Yep.
I think you should have known what to expect.
I was hoping that it was something better, honestly.
Yeah, this is not like Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep? You know, if that were similarly named, yeah, it would have just been about sheep dreams.
So this is a story about our protagonist, Victor, who is the son of Gino, who is an android, and comes across, while he's out in the junkyard with his friends Rambo and Nurse Ratchet, who are both a Roomba and a nursing robot that come across a lifelike, damaged, human-looking android and bring him back, and then discover that he's actually a android that is built to destroy humans, a la Terminator. And he builds him a heart, and then he also, like, fixes his damaged parts with wood and makes him look slightly a combination of human and machine and puppet.
Is it a mechanical heart or an organic heart?
Yes. It's a heart made of wood, and apparently the wood is what makes the love.
All right, okay.
Yep, this is where we're going. This is why I was like, oh, you.
If you wanted,
If you wanted me to, like, you know, be on board for, like, you know, nature is magical, please, please, don't make this Pinocchio. Oh, yes. That's when I lost everything, because then the first sign that I knew everything was going to go to shit was when they were in the junkyard and they saw a flying airship that was part of the Authority that is looking to hunt down any remnant humans in this machine future dystopia of ours. And that airship was in the shape of a giant whale called the Terrible Dogfish. Why did a sentient race of machines that took over the entire world decided to make their airship look like a fucking whale? I don't know. Probably should ask the author that. And I thought, you know, okay, we'll leave it there. We'll continue on. But then this is where the story starts to get bad, is because his father figure, Gino, gets taken by the Authority back to the City of Electric Dreams. And I am sitting here rolling my eyes already. But they spend 90% of this book focused on Victor being, I want my father figure back, and 10% of it being, oh yeah, this is a queer romance novel where I'm in love with the android that has a heart now. And I was just so tired by the end. I think it was when they were like, oh, we have to find the blue fairy. And I went, fuck me. You could have said, I don't know, the Azure Queen or something. Anything. Because it clearly sounded like it was a drag queen from what I remember. I was just like, guys.
This almost reeks of queer baiting at that point.
It really does. Because, like, there is a romance, but, like, they kiss, like, 3 times maybe. And it's, you know, of course the thing that brings him back from the killer android program twice throughout the book. Mm. And I'm just sitting going like, can we have some more queer romance in this queer romance novel? Unless I want a dad. Like, I was so sick of the whole father story arc. So, yeah, if you want a queer but also analog for Pinocchio story, this is neat. I'm very interested to see about a book that you're reading right now, because it's from the same author.
Oh, I am. I'm on page 2.
Yeah.
I've been on page 2 for 2 weeks.
Yeah. So, that's the same kind of person. That is the same mind that wrote that book.
Okay. Well, good to know what I'm getting into.
I hope yours is better.
We'll see. I know there are sex scenes in it, which sounds like it's not the case in yours.
No. Oh, they just avoided that entirely.
Okay, cool. Well, now that we've mentioned that I'm reading a thing, I guess I have to read the thing.
Yeah, I felt compelled to read this because it's a queer romance novel.
Yes, true.
And that's it.
And, you know, I have supported a lot of mediocre work from queer people just because it's... And I'm not going to call anybody out right now. We should just do that.
We should just do that. There was some fun stuff in this book. I think the Roomba named Rambo, adorable, and I love the whole connotation of it, was an adorable little sidekick that was aligned with him that wanted to find his heart kind of mentality. Nurse Ratched is basically just Chopper, and that was great.
How many people did she murder?
Oh, she wanted to drill everyone.
Oh.
Quite literally.
Oh, I see. Gotcha.
But yes. Also, oh my god. And there's an entire conversation about, skip forward at least 10 seconds if you don't want to get spoiled by something in the finale of this book. But there is a conversation that is completely gone over about the mentality of completely wiping the entire mind of an entire race of machine, and it just gets left in the dust.
Totally unresolved?
Totally. Well, they mentioned it like, I did a bad, but now you're back, Dad, and that's good. And I'm just like,
oh.
Guys, there's something wrong here.
Oh, boy.
It's also it's a little bit more than the Pinocchio stuff, but it's wrong. Okay, if it wasn't for the supporting cast, I would have had a much lesser experience.
Okay, fair.
Oh, Matt's gonna have fun editing this one.
Sorry.
But anyways, we'll move on to something that I know you fucking liked.
Absolutely loved, yes.
Yeah, so let's move on to our other side project that we finally caught up on because the second season had finally finished, Wheel of Time. Wesley, would you like to begin this conversation?
Sure. It's delightful. I don't know how to say this without it sounding like an insult. And that's a terrible, that's a scary way to start. I better fucking land this. It has that Sci-Fi Channel charm to it that partway through this, I was shocked to learn that there hadn't already been a Sci-Fi Channel series of this.
It's astonishing that there was not one, honestly, so that...
But it's so incredibly well-produced. I've learned that there was at least the pilot for a Wheel of Time series on Sci-Fi at one point, sort of a, like, we have the rights, we need to make something, so we'll just throw this out. And apparently that was absolutely god-awful.
Oh, I mean, is that one of those things that you could kind of find on the dark?
I have not gone looking for it yet.
Okay.
Billy Zane plays the first Forsaken.
Oh.
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
I'm maybe mixing up some details here, but that just sounds so wonderful. That has got to be phenomenally horrible. Unlike the Amazon Prime series Wheel of Time, which is, you know, charming and also genuinely good.
Well, asterisks.
Oh, minor asterisk. I guess we need to give the audience the same deal. Caveats that we had going in.
So, a friend of the show and a good friend of ours, Mikey Collins, who has been the person that has said we need to watch this series, did inform us that because of the pandemic, that they had to cut filming of the season finale of season one incredibly different.
Yes.
And also different to the point where the books were completely reworked in a way.
Well, yeah. I mean, we're condensing, what, 14? Many books. Like 6 or 8 million words worth of writing down into a 7-series show. Which is what they've currently planned and greenlit a third season. So, yeah, it's gonna be fucking awkward. And there are apparently a lot of angry fans that don't like how they've decided to rework things.
Which it sounds like most of them have stepped out of the room, finally. Which is weird, considering season two is just start to finish incredible.
Yeah, neither of us have read the books, but yeah.
I think, I mean, I see where there's maybe some, when you're not looking for it, it's fine. But when you know where, like, there is issue with the series, it's like, oh, that's a lot of CGI. And also, everyone's 6 feet apart in this really narrow hallway. Huh.
Oh, yeah.
Interesting.
I mean, I actually thought the battle worked very well for the constraints that they were under.
Yes.
Yeah.
It could have been a lot worse, but I think that they handled it decently, but it was like, once you were like, oh yeah, they filmed this during COVID, it's like, oh, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, so there's, I wish there wasn't this massive open battlefield.
Yeah, that was the kind of, the thing was, there was this massive desert-like setting where this happened, and I'm just sitting and going, guys, like, I don't know what you needed to do. Maybe you just needed to have fights in the city or something, but like,
Yeah, they made the best of that. It was fine.
It was fine. It got us the season two and season three renewal. And
Amazon, please, please pay attention. People actually like this one. Reviewers are very happy with it.
Yeah.
Most fans are happy with it. There's a vocal minority that are online because there always fucking is. And you did not spend all the money in the world on this one like you did your other kind of messy attempt at following up Lord of the Rings.
Are you just going to shit on everything that I like?
Ah, it was much messier.
Mm.
And it, you know, comparing the two, does it seem like...
Oh, I mean, if you're comparing Wheel of Time and Lord of the Rings, or Rings of Power, rather?
Yes.
Sure. I'll give it that.
Rings of Power was fine. Was it, like, 10 times the budget more fine?
No.
No. Abso-fucking-lutely not. So,
yeah.
So please, shift your resources accordingly.
I don't know. Rings of Power was fun, and I enjoyed it. I had no notes that were like, oh, you need to rewrite this.
Yeah, no, I didn't either. I liked it a lot more than a lot of the Lord of the Rings fanboys did, I think.
Well, you were totally against not watching it, and then I was kind of like, well, I'm gonna watch it, last call, and you kind of were like, eh.
Yeah, and it was fine. It didn't change my life or anything. Wheel of Time just introduced me to so many interesting sociological concepts, so many interesting magic systems.
Sure.
And everything with Lord of the Rings was familiar.
Well, Lord of the Rings set the standard.
Exactly. It was like, I already get this.
Technically, would the Wheel of Time set the standard for them? Was it that much older? I'm trying to remember who came out first.
Oh god, I'm gonna be lynched if I get this wrong, but I'm quite confident that Lord of the Rings was
okay.
At least a couple decades sooner.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to remember. The only abstract thought I have in my head, because I do not have my mini PC in my hand to look this up, is that I know they made a Tolkien movie, and I believe he was like someone in one of the World Wars. Might have been World War II that he was a soldier in, and that's where he got like some of the visual cues to write this.
Possibly. I just know he has been quoted over and over and over again as being, this is not a war allegory. And it's, okay, dude, that's fine. That's fine. Sure.
Sure.
I mean, maybe not intentionally. I'll give you that. You weren't trying to make it political, but, you know.
We get it.
The Call of Duty fanboys are wrong about that, too.
Yes. We get it. It's political. It's Call of Duty.
Yeah. Where were we, though? Rings of Power was fine, but yeah, like,
I wouldn't mind seeing them taking the half of the budget from Rings of Power and putting it into a Wheel of Time Season 3. But also, I feel like Rings of Power, they started off with that budget, and there's no going down from that budget.
I guess. I don't see what they spent it on still when I compare the two series.
They spent it on clearly all the CGI.
Yeah, and they really didn't need to. Like, Wheel of Time uses CGI extremely effectively, for the most part.
It does, but there is such deeper detail in the background of Rings of Power that I think you do not remember.
Probably, and I think that's kind of my point. If they need
that's
to
fine.
Skimp on that stuff, yeah, some people are going to hem and haw, but it's not going to break the series.
Sure. Do I recognize... I recognize that Rings of Power is absolutely a prettier show, and I do remember it being much prettier than Wheel of Time. Do I think Wheel of Time is thematically and narratively and character-wise much better and greater? Absolutely.
Also, costumes. I can't remember a single Ring of Power costume.
Oh, you weren't looking at the women, then.
Well, Wheel of Time is top-to-bottom women.
Well, there
women
is that
everywhere.
True, yes.
All of them in stunning costumes. Implausible, impossible costumes at some point.
So we should probably, because we've been talking about this for 10 minutes already, we should probably talk about what the fuck is a Wheel of Time and what is the story about.
Oh,
because
yeah.
I have actually had conversations with people that I'm like, so I know you're a big, like, high fantasy fan, one of my straight friends, because I, you know, assumed that maybe he is such a deep, like, high fantasy fan that I was like, oh, you would at least heard of Wheel of Time, right? And he didn't fucking hear any of it, but he's read every fucking Lord of the Rings and, you know, Tolkien thing. And I'm like, okay, well, please at least watch the Amazon series.
Yeah, it's so weird, because you've seen Wheel of Time ideas and things. You've absolutely seen them.
Oh, 100%. But yes, let us talk about what this story is. So the Wheel of Time is a story about finding the Dragon Reborn, which is this prophetic magic user that is reborn and can go either way, basically.
Yes. So the two deific entities to familiarize yourself with are the Dark One and the Dragon.
Mm-hmm.
And the Wheel of Time is a metaphorical concept of time. It rotates. And it goes through these phases over and over again, and people reincarnate, and, you know, every time you sort of hit the same plot beats, but at the end of each cycle of the Wheel of Time, the Dark One and the Dragon get together, and the dragon will either defeat the Dark One or join him. And that sort of sets the tone for the next cycle of things. And, you know, the people in power always want the dragon to defeat rather than join. Because bad things.
Bad things.
So that's the core premise. It is high fantasy, but, you know, there's some wiggle room for bringing in other genres.
Exactly. Our story begins with five young individuals from a small town in the Two Rivers, and following our incredibly Aes Sedai queen that we subscribed to until season two when I subscribed to a new queen, Moiraine?
It's Moiraine? I believe it is actually Moraine, but...
Are you actually Leviosa-ing me right now?
Maybe. It is spelled Moiraine. And I always hear that in my head, regardless of whether... I don't think that's in the pronunciation. So, fun thing, a lot of people like to argue about the pronunciation of things with this series.
Sweet Jesus Christ.
Especially now that we have a, quote, canon interpretation of all of it.
Fun. I hate it. Anyways.
We have names like Moraine and Egwene and...
Oh, God. So, that is something I'm going to put forward, and I'm still so fucking... I don't know anything other than Moiraine, which apparently I didn't know.
No, Moraine. Just Moraine. I'm pretty sure it does. You do not pronounce the I.
I need you to definitively fucking tell me.
No,
what this woman's name is.
It might be way more subtle than I can actually.
Oh,
whatever.
Anyways.
Go with your feels.
With this series, names are hard.
Yes.
Because I only know like five. Because that's how many fingers I have in my hand, and that's how many I can count right now. And, like, apparently there are names that sound like other names, and, like, them just... Ah!
Yeah.
And that's my only complaint.
They color code a lot of people, so that helps.
Thank God they color code people. Oh, that's the red one? Okay, cool.
It's Leandrin, not to be confused with Leanne.
Oh, the green one?
The green one's Leanne. The red one's Leandrin.
So, yes, the green ones are the sluts. Excellent. Yes. I'm a green one. Oh, boy. Yes. So, they have, in this world, our leading lady, Moraine,
yep,
goes to this village and finds that there are these five potential individuals to be the Dragon Reborn. And because the Dark One is setting his forces upon the village, she says, well, you're all fucking coming with me. And... their adventure begins off from there as they run away from the Dark One and try to understand their own powers and who is the Dragon Reborn and so on and so forth.
Yeah. There's lots of secrets. There's lots of politics.
Lots of politics.
Yeah.
Lots of lesbians. Lots of gay. All of this is gay. There's no straight person to be seen. If they are around, they are easily corrupted.
Well, like, everyone is straight, with one notable exception. It's just they're all also incredibly gay. And it's hard to adequately describe what that means.
I think this is what happens when you have a gay showrunner running this. Yes,
exactly what happens.
And then that's when you have to look in yourself in the mirror and go, we need a gay president to fix the fucking world.
Yeah.
What happened to Uncle Pete? Let's get Pete Buttigieg in the fucking Oval Office.
Oh, boy. I'm not backing that. Not backing it either. I'm just like, I'm tired. Anyways. This show's wonderful.
This show is wonderful if you want to avoid the entire dystopic future of our society as it crumbles around us.
Should we talk about Israel next?
No! I have to, like, put earbuds in when I try to get an actual opinion formulated on here, which I have one, and I'm not talking about it on our podcast, because that will get us an entire different kind of audience that I don't want on here.
Yeah, today's The Onion headline was just, The Onion supports Israel, because it seems like that'll get us in the least trouble, and I relate.
Oh, boy. Yeah, so... anyway, speaking of shit shows, you want to talk about Symphony of the Night?
Oh!
I'm sorry, did you get wounded by something?
Oh!
I'm sorry! I have been like that this whole episode.
Just because I said Ahsoka was me?
Because you lied to me for 2 weeks about it.
Oh, I have not lied.
You have not spoken to me about it.
Moiraine would have been able to say everything I said.
Oh, my God. Oh, yes. Talk about Symphony of the Night, you fucking dick.
Castlevania Symphony of the Night.
Whatever.
Is a game that I wanted to dig out again after watching Castlevania Nocturne. Nocturne, of course, meaning Night Symphony, which took me way too fucking long to figure out.
And was it all the operatics?
Yeah, probably. So, turns out that I had a save file in progress for where I lost interest. And, yeah, I was able to just pick that up again and power through it. This game does mostly hold up, but it really shows its age in game design philosophies as far as not holding the player's hand and not really giving a shit about being fair or balanced. And how to describe, like, I'm not enough of a Dark Souls fan to feel like I can really make this comparison, but many of the later boss fights, especially in the back half of the game where the castle is turned upside down, you do just kind of have to cheese. And I don't really feel guilty about that, given just how stupidly difficult they are to get through, quote, fairly, when there's literally an instant win button. It feels like a cheat. I'm talking about the shield rod hacks that you can pull for anyone in the know, which I had absolutely no guilt about beginning to employ once I reached some of those tougher bosses. Anyways, yeah, no, this game is phenomenal. I don't know if you ever intend to play it, looking at it showed any interest to you.
Not the moment, at least. I have way too much fucking shit to catch up on. I'm just waiting for the WGA strikes to finally catch up on us.
Yeah, that's true. That is absolutely going to happen. And man, I don't mind having to wait for shows. I do lament what that's going to do to shows that are already in progress. Anyways, Symphony of the Night is the story of Alucard, Dracula's son, just sort of showing up to stop Dracula. That's about it.
That's it.
But this was the game that gave us the iconic Lisa story that is so central to the first season of the Castlevania Netflix series. We get a good sense of Alucard's relationship to both of his parents through like 90 seconds of cutscenes. So if you don't want to play a full, like, 20, 30-hour game to get through it, that's frankly quite painful at points, feel free to let yourself off the hook and just watch YouTube cutscenes.
Was that 20 to 30 hours?
I had a save file already in progress, so...
Oh.
Yeah, I only played maybe the last 5 to 10 hours. And also, you know, I know what I'm doing, so... A lot of the aimless exploration I didn't have to do.
I'm not just some simpleton.
Yes, this is like my fourth or fifth playthrough of the game.
This is not your first rodeo?
This is not my first rodeo. It has yet to be my first rodeo.
I hate you.
I know. But yeah, and that's another thing is like, yeah, I could just wander around this castle slaughtering things randomly for quite a while. Like, literally hours and hours and hours. Or I could just look at a guide. I've already done it once. I'm not going to do it again.
Sure.
You're probably not going to do it again. Or do it for the first time. You will lose interest because, yeah, there's no way to know that if you get a gold ring and a silver ring from these two random-ass areas of the map that you may have already been through but didn't fully explore, you'll be able to unlock the real ending of the game, which opens up another 10 hours of content.
Oh.
Yeah. So... About halfway through the game, you get a final boss fight that paints one of the legacy characters of Castlevania as behind the whole thing.
Okay.
And, you know, if you beat him, then that's just the credits. Good job, you won. It's kind of a tragic story. But you can jump through all these extra hoops to find out that wasn't the whole story.
Okay.
Which is a really interesting way to do it. It's an easy way to actually have your audience miss half of your story.
Sounds about right.
Which, you know, includes reviewers, probably. So I'm curious. Well, so this is back in the day, probably, when you could just pay for reviews, too. Because it came out in, like, Game Informer, and you could probably coach people through. You didn't have random YouTube jackasses blowing up. that you have to worry about.
Yeah.
So, much, much different times. Do I have anything else to say? Yeah, I highly recommend this game, but...
Beware.
Have a friend that's played it. If you know me personally and want to ask questions, get an actual informed opinion of somebody who can be like, yeah, they're not going to teach you any of the spells. You'll be able to buy, like, the two worst ones, but maybe you try this input code and see what happens. Yeah, it works best with friends. That's an interesting point about gaming communities at large. Somewhere late 90s, early 2000s, we lost sight of gaming being a community thing where, like, you and your friends on a bus would discuss things you found out.
I think the internet just ruined that, dear.
Yeah, the internet did absolutely ruin this.
Yes.
The idea of these being worlds to explore just completely collapsed.
So guess what? You do it now, you know, the Monday after a Mile High Wretches game where you talk to your friends on the bus when the bus is Discord.
Yeah, TRPGs have absolutely supplanted this because you are the only person in existence who knows what's in store for our wretches.
Yep.
And the rest of us just have to talk to each other.
And I have to talk to myself about it.
Yep.
Because usually you're the person I talk to, and I can't talk to you about it. It sucks. I am so alone.
Oh, I know that feeling. At least you can talk to a friend of the show, Jess.
No.
Wow. You really are alone on this one.
I'm alone.
Wow.
Anyways, speaking of tabletop, would you like to talk about lessons learned in Tabletop Update? You.
I'm having a rough time.
You're having a rough time.
I'm having a real rough time.
Do you have any wise words to share, or?
I guess two things to say. One is, fuck the legacy editions of World of Darkness. You really need to know them in and out, upwards, downwards, sideways, slantways, or else you are gonna have a bad time. It's rough. I don't know what to do at this point. My story is, it's not going where it needs to. I keep trying to course correct, and it just feels like more and more is getting lost the harder I try. And I think I can pin a lot of it on the edition of Werewolf that I am running. Not entirely, though. I do have to take plenty of personal responsibility for things that I could have done better, communicated to my players better, etc., etc. But yeah, and I guess the lesson learned there is don't plan a campaign right off the bat that's going to be 50 plus sessions. You know, plan 3 to 4 session games until you really know a system, really know your players, really are sure that you're going to have a good time long term. Yeah, unfortunately, that's the hard lesson that I'm learning right now is I should have not done 50 sessions. I should have done 3 to 4 sessions at a time until things felt better.
No, that makes sense to me.
Yeah.
You and I talked enough about this. I can move on to what I have learned recently, and I'm trying to think of things I've learned since running games last night, and I'm drawing a blank. Maybe it's just be on your feet. Last night I had an opportunity to have to make sure that when the party split itself, I had to give the others an encounter, so to speak. So always think about the party split details. Think about who is going where, who is going to be in the party that now has to have something made up for them. Maybe it's something that's connected to the people that are not there. And in this case, I decided to throw one of the player characters' sire at you and another player character while they were completely separate.
Yeah, it was a real bad day for Trent.
It was a really bad day for Trent.
And I felt bad because my character Lance kind of decided to
antagonize him.
Not antagonize him. He offered to hang back with Trent's new boyfriend and protect him, which kind of feels like stepping on his toes a little bit. That wasn't really what I was thinking at the time, but, you know, live with these decisions. But then I find out that the thing that I sent him on was incredibly relevant to him as well. So either way, he would have been facing down trauma.
Oh, absolutely. That boy is not avoiding trauma.
Yeah.
So yeah, I guess my story is traumatize your players.
Now, I did find it interesting in this situation. You've done a lot of work where I felt like you could have plugged in any number of NPCs.
Oh, I will give you a little spoiler. That sire was absolutely going to be potentially a part of it, that scene, one way or another. Oh,
interesting.
I had potentially thought of that going a couple different ways, and when you gave me the opportunity, I decided to manually rework some stuff. But yes, I do know my characters enough that I could have supplanted a bunch of characters at that moment that would have probably been equally as interesting.
Yeah.
So yeah, traumatizing players. That's my little advice.
And my advice, if you're a player, just don't have a backstory, and then your DM will be powerless. This is terrible advice.
That's terrible advice. give your fucking GM a story. What the fuck is wrong with you?
I was being sarcastic.
Uh-huh.
I mean, sure, yeah, you'll have a boring-ass story where nothing fucking happens like Ahsoka, but it'll at least, you know, save you the trauma.
Okay, we are going to the current events before I cut a bitch. Just looking to cut you in the future. In-game.
Yes, I got that, dear.
Anyways. Speaking of people getting a cut, Bobby Kotick is out at Activision.
This is like 2 weeks after the merger was...
The merger's official as of this week.
This week. Okay, yeah. So that's where this came from.
Apparently, they got James Corden to come in and do a sit-down with Bobby. as a farewell. And there's no one else that feels just so right for this terrible man to sit down with.
I don't understand this story whatsoever.
James Corden is a disgusting human being, in my opinion, but...
See, I heard those stories about him being a dick at restaurants. That's about all I really heard.
I hate him because he has no taste and ruins every single musical that he's in, but that's besides me.
Okay. Like, yeah, I don't think I've ever enjoyed any of his performances, but, you know, whatever. I love the theory that he's basically doing what Cypher did in The Matrix, and the agents have just plugged him back in and given him this actor's life despite having no talent.
Oh my god. Yeah, that sounds about right.
That's how this happened.
That sounds about right. So Kotick is out, and I guess he'll run for president or something. Oh, I just doomed us all. Anyways, next story, we see another CEO. No, not even CEO. Who is Pete Hines leaves Bethesda after 24 years of service.
Yeah, I should know. I've worked
under
him. You know, not like directly. I didn't report to him or anything, but I was on a team that got very excited every time he got up and talked about our stuff. I will say that much.
Yes. Whatever your NDA at the time, that probably still is no longer valid, can cover.
Yeah. I believe it is still valid, though. These are the sorts of things. Well, regardless, it's like, it's bad form to talk about certain things.
Sure.
And people might notice.
We're not talking bad about...
You just shouldn't. Yeah.
Pete Hines is not Bobby Kotick. Bobby Kotick's a fucking piece of shit, and we could say that, because we say that a lot of times on the podcast.
Sure. But yeah, Pete Hines had 24 years, great career. I did genuinely enjoy every time he got up to talk. It seemed like he knew what he was talking about, genuinely cared about the games that he was working on, had a good relationship with his player base. Seemed like a stand-up fellow, in my opinion.
Considering the other person that you see from this company is Todd Howard, he was absolutely the nice cleansing I needed.
Yeah, and honestly, there's something to be said about that. Maybe now that he's gone, we'll actually stop making excuses for this company. There's nobody for them to point to.
Hey, maybe. That'd be nice, you know.
Yeah.
I slowly start to see occasionally just glitchy videos from Starfield, and I'm like, thank God I didn't jump on that train.
Apologies to anyone who that was their, like, fantasy space sim. There's got to be a better option out there. No Man's Sky, hell, FTL.
No Man's Sky I do hear really good things about.
Yeah.
So... if you're looking for something that is a genuinely good space-faring adventure, check out No Man's Sky, I guess.
I guess, yeah.
And last, certainly not least, I found this out literally as I was just signing on for the podcast. Apparently, we are getting a live-action Gargoyle series from James Wan.
I'll believe it when I see it.
I believe it dropped as soon as we were hitting play to do this, so...
Wait, like, dropped as in... No.
The news dropped.
The news dropped, okay. It'd be cool. I think... You know, I did recently watch the animated series for basically the first time, rather than just catching a couple episodes when it was on.
Right.
There's a lot to work with. Yeah, it had an incredibly strong first and final season, kind of got lost up its own ass with lore in the middle. So if a live-action retelling figured out that it wanted to be about that stuff and exposited it to us in a good way early on.
Yeah.
I'd be all in on that.
And I think we will get that.
Yeah.
I certainly hope so. And with that, would you like to end this very conflicting episode of Game Boys?
Sure.
My name is Matt.
And I am Wes.
He hates Ahsoka.
I cannot work up an emotion about it. And that's almost worse than hating it.
So he really hates Ahsoka. And this has been Game Boys. Thank you very much for listening.
Thank you for listening. Love you all.
And we will talk to you very soon.
Yep.
Bye. Bye.